here is a special announcement. Today is Tuesday, and not, as is announced in today's Sunday Telegraph, Friday. And now, a repeat of last Thursday's performance of Monday Night is Music Night.
You are tuned in now to this week's episode of Evening Under Lamplight, coming to you from the studios of Cambridge 105, community radio in your city, with me, Robert Louis Abrahamson. You can reach me at rla@momentsunderlamplight.co.uk or lamplight@cambridge105.fm. And our archives are posted at momentsunderlamplight.co.uk. So stick around for this evening's show, to which, as usual, you are invited to attend. This show, it's a milestone for us, since we'll be attending to the two final chants of Whitman's long poem, Song of Myself. These two chants form the ninth sequence, the ninth larger section of the poem, and run from line 1309 to 1336. We began our march through this poem section by section when Series 3 began back on July 1st, 2014. So 52 sections coming out every other week, sometimes covering two sections, once or twice omitting the Whitman altogether, extending over 22 months. What I hope to do, when I can get to it, is extract the Whitman discussions and readings and create a series of podcasts for YouTube. Even if you've been listening to the Whitman discussions on the shows, you'll want to hear these all over again. A great piece of literature like Song of Myself needs to be lived with, visited over and over again. I used to have a recording of Orson Welles reading Song of Myself. It was wonderful, but I can no longer find the old cassette tape. No doubt I'll find it as soon as we finish this show and my fortnightly engagement with the poem has come to an end. Listening to readings is always a good way to internalize literature. You find yourself weeks later repeating phrases that you suddenly remember come from that poem you'd been listening to. In fact, this aspect of reading is what we'll hear Whitman speaking about this week. His final lines, which we'll attend to in more depth soon, assure us that he'll always be with us, waiting until we are ready to meet him and resonate with him. Failing to fetch me at first, keep encouraged. Missing me one place, search another. I stop somewhere waiting for you. And I've taken that final line as the title of this show. I stop somewhere waiting for you. Evening Under Lamplight, too, come to think of it, stops somewhere waiting for you. Stops on SoundCloud or momentsunderlamplight.co.uk or on Our Salon Radio. Have you come across Our Salon Radio yet? You can find it at oursalon.ning.com/radio. Its motto is Talk Radio, because great minds don't think alike. There are at least 30 different shows featured there, including Evening Under Lamplight. Go to the site, oursalon.ning.com/radio, and check out what's on offer. What I propose doing this evening under lamplight is reading Chat 51 and discussing it with various diversions as usual, and then moving on to Chat 52, reading and discussing it with diversions. You come too, as Robert Frost says.
I'm going out to clean the pasture spring. I'll only stop to rake the leaves away and wait to watch the water clear, I may. I shan't be gone long. You come, too. I'm going out to fetch the little calf that's standing by the mother. It's so young, it totters when she licks it with her tongue. I shan't be gone long. You come, too.
Robert Frost reading Pasture, a poem he always included at the beginning of his collection of poems. He's talking about doing farm work, but we're more sedentary here. It takes almost no effort for you to come, too. You just have to try to be attentive now and then. I'll do my best to merit your attention. So first, here's Whitman's 51st chant of Song of Myself. The past and present wilt. I have filled them and emptied them, and proceed to fill my next fold of the future. Listener up there, hear you, what have you to confide to me? Look in my face while I snuff the sidle of evening. Talk honestly, for no one else hears you, and I stay only a minute longer. Do I contradict myself? Very well, then, I contradict myself. I am large. I contain multitudes. I concentrate toward them that are nigh. I wait on the door slab. Who has done his day's work and will soonest be through with his supper? Who wishes to walk with me? Will you speak before I am gone? Will you prove already too late? Well, after all that talking stretching over 1,300 lines, Whitman is ready to depart, or let's say ready to let go. He has done what he came for, and instead of sticking around, making sure his words have the right effect upon us, making sure we're being attentive enough, he just lets go and lets the poem do its own work. Whitman prepares to go on to whatever project awaits him next. The past and present wilt, he says. I suppose if we've wasted our time or done things we regret, then we find it hard to let go. But if we know we've done good work, it becomes much easier to move on. Whitman knows he's done good work. He has filled and emptied the past and present, and can now proceed to fill my next fold of the future. What is a fold of the future? He proposes to see the future as a kind of map, constantly unfolding, or maybe even a blank sheet of paper that he can unfold and then fill with his next poem, whatever it will be. These lines reverberate, and it strikes me now that this would be a good line to post up on our desk, so that when we sit down in the morning for the day's work, we can incant Whitman's chant or magic spell, blessing the new day's work. I proceed to fill my next fold of the future. But wait, before he leaves us entirely, he turns to us one more time. We spoke last time about the way dramatic voices give a piece of writing its vibrancy, and here's a particularly odd dramatic turn. Whitman's voice on the page of the book, looking up at us, the reader, as we tower up there, above the book, looking down at the page. Hey, you up there, reading this book. This is what's called in the theatre breaking the fourth wall, breaking down the illusion that what is being performed is real, and instead reminding us that it is just a performance or an artifact or just words on a page. And Whitman seems to be in a hurry. He's going to be leaving in a minute. Do you have any questions? In fact, he sort of grabs at us. Here, you, what have you to confide to me? I have just given you all these 1,300 lines and more. What do you have to say to me? I confided in you. What will you confide to me? It's getting dark, the sidle of the evening. But look in my face while I snuff or extinguish the sidle of evening. I can spare you a few minutes, just you and me. Talk honestly, for no one else hears you, and I stay only a minute longer. And let's us take a break for a minute, letting Bob Dylan pick up this theme of what have you to confide in me with his song, What Was It You Wanted? Certainly a more complex drama than Whitman's, as Dylan's speaking to someone who's just kissed his cheek. He plays coy and acts as if he doesn't know what's on her mind. Whatever you wanted slipped out of my mind. Would you remind me again if you'd be so kind? Thus making her come out and confide what's on her mind, while he keeps himself carefully guarded. Not quite the Whitman spirit after all, and in fact, an interesting contrast.
What was it you wanted? Tell me again so I'll know. What's happening in there? What's going on in your show? What was it you wanted? Could you tell me again? I'll be back in a minute. You can get it together by then. What was it you wanted? You can tell me I'm back. We could start it all over. Get it back on the track. I'm paying attention. Go ahead, you can speak. What was it you wanted when you were kissing my cheek? Was there somebody looking when you give me that kiss? Someone in the shadow? Someone I might have missed. Is it something you needed? Something I don't understand. What was it you wanted to have it here in my hand? Whatever you wanted, it slipped out of my mind. You remind me again, if you'd be so kind. Has the record been breaking? Did the needle just skip? Is there somebody waiting? Was there a slip of the lip? What was it you wanted? I ain't keeping score. Are you the same person that was here before? Is it something important? Maybe not. What was it you wanted? Tell me again, I forgot. Are you talking to me?
Bob Dylan, What Was It You Wanted? From the album Oh Mercy. But now you recall we left Whitman lingering with us only a minute longer. He sounds like he's ready to rush off. Yet throughout the poem, he's been telling us that he's waiting right there for us. He has even felt a little alarmingly like a stalker. Remember such lines as, I am around, tenacious, acquisitive, tireless, and can never be shaken away. Even when he couldn't answer our questions, at least he was there, patiently standing alongside us. You are asking me questions, he had said, and I hear you. I answer what I cannot answer. You must find out for yourself. Is Whitman contradicting himself when he now says that he'll stay for only a minute? Yes, he is contradicting himself, as he's the first to acknowledge. He's not pinned down to any static position, but varies his position according to the different dramatic contexts he finds himself in, as we all should vary ourselves. Or as he says in one of the most famous passages in the poem, Do I contradict myself? Very well, then, I contradict myself. I am large, I contain multitudes. When we are large and contain multitudes, of course we will contradict ourselves. In fact, what makes us so large is that we have brought together opposing points of view even, unifying them not into one consistent whole, but into a unity that accepts their differences and welcomes them. This is what life is all about, if richly engaged in. Remember the line from earlier on, another one of the great lines in the poem. Out of the dimness, opposite equals advance. Always substance and increase. Always a knit of identity. Always distinction. Always a breed of life. In other words, there is always this group of disparate, distinct identities, but coming together in a knit of identity, working together, a pluribus unum, one out of many. Contradictions all coming into harmony. Let's attend a little more to this confession of contradicting himself. We're usually told that we should be consistent. I suppose that shows that we have it all together, all worked out. But is that something to brag about? What about the mysteries of life? People who have it all worked out have, it can appear, narrowed their view of life to exclude anything they don't understand because somehow they feel they have to make consistent sense of everything in the world. Ralph Waldo Emerson, always a strong influence on Whitman at this time, famously declared that a foolish consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds. A hobgoblin because a kind of demon on the shoulder of these little minds, urging them to be consistent, even if it means excluding aspects of life that don't fit. Life appears secure and comprehensible to such people, but notice that they are not moving from their single spot. Or, as Oscar Wilde said, consistency is the last refuge of the unimaginative. Consistent people, he implies, simply do not have the imagination to move to any place different. They remain the same because they cannot picture being anything else. I remember reading somewhere the very proud, we might say smug, announcement by some rich businessman that he had set himself a plan of life at age 16 and had followed it for 50 years without changing it, and this, he claimed, made him the success he was. He had money, to be sure, but we might question what kind of success he demonstrated. The very tone of his announcement, there's the important dramatic voice again, gave off a feeling of unpleasantness. I wouldn't want to be with him, a man incapable of contradicting himself. One of Robert Louis Stevenson's essays that I've been editing addresses this topic too. In his essay Crabbed Age and Youth, Stevenson proposes that it is healthy, indeed necessary, for us to change our ideas as we grow older, It's a sign of recognizing that we have moved on and not just stayed the same. To hold the same views at 40 as we held at 20, he says, is to have been stupefied for a score of years and take rank not as a prophet, but as an unteachable brat, well birched and none the wiser. It is as if a ship, captain, should sail to India from the port of London, and having brought a chart of the Thames on deck at his first setting out, should obstinately use no other for the whole voyage. That was Jimmy Walker and Erwin Helfer with Making the Changes, see the point, Making the Changes, from what I think we must call their Boogie Woogie album, Rough and Ready. But we were talking about being consistent versus contradicting oneself. Whitman is proud of being contradictory. Very well, then, he says, I contradict myself. I am large. I contain multitudes. But his contradiction is of that special kind called a paradox, which is a statement that expresses an apparent contradiction. All truths worth anything can be expressed as paradox. So when Whitman says he will always be with us, and yet he says he will stay only a minute longer, it is only an apparent contradiction. Yes, Whitman is going, the poem is coming to an end, and yet he will stay with us in a different form, not the words on the page as we read, but as the spirit of the poem, effusing itself into us as we go on, as he will describe a few lines further on. Or as Jesus told his disciples, I go away and come again unto you, returning as the spirit, the comforter, that is, the strengthener. But before he goes, Whitman is available, at least for them that are nigh, those who have been caught by his words. But he's a little coy, too. "I wait on the door slab," he says, with his usual slangy casualness. We can picture him lounging, leaning against the door, waiting for us to finish our supper. Or perhaps there is no longer a door, since, as we may remember, he had called for the doors to be removed. "Unscrew the locks from the doors. Unscrew the doors themselves from their jams." Whitman waits at the doorway, the place of leaving where we are, the place of entering into our new adventure, our new life. But as usual, Whitman does not ignore the mundane details of everyday life. He is ready to leave, but he is courteous and knows that we have had our daily work to do and we need our refreshment. "Who has done his day's work and will soonest be through with his supper?" he asks. "Who wishes to walk with me?" Yes, let's not get too relaxed about it. Let's not luxuriate at our supper table. There is still some urgency. If we have anything to say to Whitman, let's not wait too long to say it. "Will you speak before I am gone? Or will you prove already too late?" "Are you sure you want to say goodbye, though? Maybe hello would be more appropriate. Hello. Goodbye. Do I contradict myself? Very well, then, I contradict myself. Yes? No?"
You say.
That was the version of Hello Goodbye from the second anthology album, rather than the final version that appeared as a single and on the American Magical Mystery Tour. Oh, yes, the Beatles, of course. But you knew that. And you knew, though by regulation we have to keep reminding you, that you're listening now to Evening Under Lamplight on Cambridge 105 with Robert Louis Abrahamson. We're attending this evening to the two final sections of Whitman's Song of Myself. We've just finished Chant 51. Now we're ready to embark on Chant 52, the ending of this long, long poem. The spotted hawk swoops by and accuses me. He complains of my gab and my loitering. I too am not a bit tamed. I too am untranslatable. I sound my barbaric yawp over the roofs of the world. The last scud of day holds back for me. It flings my likeness after the rest, and true as any on the shadowed wilds. It coaxes me to the vapour and the dusk. I depart as air. I shake my white locks at the runaway sun. I effuse my flesh in eddies and drift it in lacy jags. I bequeath myself to the dirt to grow from the grass I love. If you want me again, look for me under your boot soles. You hardly know who I am or what I mean, but I shall be good health to you nevertheless, and filter and fibre your blood. Failing to fetch me at first, keep encouraged. Missing me one place, search another. I stop somewhere, waiting for you. Suddenly we find ourselves back outside in the open air, as suddenly the spotted hawk swoops by and accuses me. This is perhaps an immature hawk, since most of them have spotted breasts. But of course, this being poetry, the bird is also spotted because Whitman has spotted it, his eye looking skyward. I've seen contradictory attempts to identify which bird exactly this refers to. It's okay to have contradictory identifications, of course. The image is large. It contains multitudes. Robert Haas opts for the red-tailed hawk, which Whitman might well have seen flying over the rooftops of Brooklyn. Sidney J. Krause, on the other hand, thinks the bird is a male nighthawk, who, when courting, gives an ardent and amorous performance. At more or less regular intervals, he swoops down, often within a few yards of his mate. Just as he seems about to dash into the ground, he makes an abrupt upward turn, the vibrating primaries producing the well-known boom. From that point, he descends and begins a comical dance before the largely passive female, spreading his tail and wagging it while he gives his body a peculiar rocking motion and utters guttural croaking noises. The boom can be heard for a considerable distance. That's the way he describes the bird. But of course, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter which exact bird the image refers to, or even if the bird is a real bird at all, I suppose. What matters is the image itself, a presence swooping down from the heavens to comment on Whitman's poem, a kind of comic deflation of the Holy Spirit descending on Jesus in a bodily shape like a dove upon him, and a voice came from heaven which said, "Thou art my beloved Son, in thee I am well pleased." Ah, but this voice swoops down to complain of my gab and my loitering. You've gabbed on and on for 1,320 lines so far, just spewing out words, getting nothing accomplished, just an idler. In thee I am not particularly well pleased. But is Whitman bothered by this? No, of course not. In fact, he doesn't even seem to regard it as a criticism. He identifies himself with the bird. In the Gospels, the Spirit came in the bodily shape of a dove, a tame or almost tame bird. But here, Whatever spirit is speaking to Whitman comes as a hawk, free and wild up in the air, and it's here that Whitman sees the identification. I, too, he says, I, too, am not a bit tamed. I, too, am untranslatable. The spotted hawk cannot even be translated into a specific species. It is not only a free and wild bird in the sky, but also a free and wild image on the page. If it is, as Krauss suggests, a nighthawk, then it does seem to tame itself by swooping down towards us, but then it flies back up into the air, always out of reach. We're asked here to see Whitman's Song of Myself in this same way. Sometimes we can feel we've tamed the poem, but then it soars up out of our reach back into the skies. And like this hawk squawking over the rooftops, Whitman too is squawking, or rather in his famous words, I sound my barbaric yawp over the roofs of the world.
Won't you sing me a song or two? Won't take it long to sing to me, please. Won't you whistle a tune? I got nothing to gain, I got nothing to lose. But if you sing me a song, you make me happy. Sing, Mr. Songbird. Sing, Mr. Songbird. Sing, Mr. Songbird. You help to keep my troubles away.
A little break with the Kinks, asking for a song from Mr. Songbird to help keep his troubles away, helping even, he says in desperation, help to keep the devil away. Birdsong as palliative or distraction. Whitman's Spotted Hawk poem is a little different, yawping at us, not especially comforting, but stimulating, arousing yearnings in us, teasing us, making us stretch and awake to the wildness all around us and within us. An amazing image, well worth the time we've spent attending to it. The next image seems at first pretty hard to grasp. Like a hawk flying back out of our reach, the image shifts to an end-of-the-day scene. The last scud of day holds back for me. It flings my likeness after the rest, and true as any on the shadowed wilds. It coaxes me to the vapor and the dusk. The word scud has a double meaning, both appropriate. It can mean a low, thin cloud driven by the wind, or the act of driving along, rushing along. The last cloud of the daylight, perhaps that long, thin cloud near the horizon, catching the last red or orange glow from the sunset, retaining this color just for him. Or it could mean that the day rushing through its hours, time never stopping as it moves moment by moment, nevertheless does stop for him, holds back for me. Again, this is an image reflecting Whitman himself, who has just told us that he's getting ready to depart but will stay only a minute longer for us. This scud flings my likeness after the rest. The rest of what? The rest of the moments of the day? The rest of the world, including us readers? Maybe it's that red glow in the west from the last lit cloud, casting its glow on the world, this glow being Whitman's likeness. But this end-of-day scene also points to the shadowed wilds, those places we cannot discern and cannot tame, the vapour and the dusk towards which it is coaxing Whitman, and I suppose us too, following him there. And he departs in a flurry of images. I depart as air. I shake my white locks at the runaway sun. I effuse my flesh in eddies and drift it in lacy jags. He departs as air. How does air depart? Well, like the wind. It passes us and goes off in a direction we think we can determine, but the wind moveth where it listeth, after all, and is as wild as anything we know of. He shakes his white locks. Whitman's hair was turning prematurely grey. He was only 36 when he wrote the poem, but his photograph shows some grey at the temples. But that's not really the point here, is it? We're not speaking of Walter Whitman, 1819 to 1892, but the mythic Walt Whitman, the mystic seer who has been portrayed throughout the poem. The sun, like time, is running away, scudding away, and the poet shakes his long white hair, the symbol of his wisdom, also, I guess, of his having aged throughout the experiences related in the poem itself. He shakes his hair in defiance, or in preparation for whatever's coming next, or as a kind of offering to the moment. Well, not just his hair, but his flesh as well. He effuses it, turning his flesh into a liquid, it seems, and pouring it out in eddies, spilling it all over the place, letting it drift in lacy jags, in little jagged pieces like little bits of lace all over the place. This lacy jag can remind us of the earlier image of the grass as the lacy handkerchief of the Lord, a scented gift and remembrancer designedly dropped, bearing the owner's name somewhere in the corners. This poem, of course, this song of myself, is the flesh effused and drifting, the uneven lines looking like lacy jags. And speaking of the grass image, which came to be the title of Whitman's whole book, Leaves of Grass, Whitman now lets himself be effused into the ground. I bequeath myself to the dirt to grow from the grass I love. If you want me again, look for me under your boot soles. So that's what he's done. He's not disappeared into the darkening western sky. After all, he is everywhere. He is the ground we walk on. If you want me again, look for me under your boot soles. He is there where we are standing right now. That's the kind of poem we've been reading. It connects to every moment of our lives. Infinitely adaptable, it is so wild. Wild and unreachable, but life-affirming, life-giving. You will hardly know who I am or what I mean, but I shall be good health to you nevertheless, and filter and fibre your blood. Do you see what he's doing? As he gets ready to go, he is giving us instructions. No, not instructions so much as just some hints and bits of advice about how we are to read the poem, or about what effect the poem will have on us. We will find it hard to understand. We're all agreed on that. But nevertheless, it imparts good health at some level, even if we do not understand it. So much for our modern scientific way of responding to the world, not counting anything of any worth unless we can know it, understand it clearly with our intellect. No, Whitman is saying, there are other ways of assessing worth, other ways of interacting with the things of this world. If we can immediately understand something, a poem, let's say, then we think we have it, and that's that. Bad poems are like that. They give us a cute image or a surge of sentiment, and we've had the experience. But good poems, and especially great poems, make us work at the stretch. And if we don't get the poem, we don't throw it away. We come back to it again and again. Or the words or the spirit of the poem come back to us again and again, bringing new insights. We take a journey with the poem, or the music, or the painting, or the beautiful building, or, of course, any human being we are in relation with at any level. Let's take these three final lines of the poem as the motto for all our relationships with art or with people or with the divinity, of course. Failing to fetch me at first, keep encouraged. Missing me one place, search another. I stop somewhere, waiting for you. How was that? Saint-Saëns' Carnival of the Animals, the section on fossils. It took me a long time to decide what piece of music to play after reading those final lines. I went through my music several times, hoping to find a piece that was suitable both in meaning and in sound. I tried several songs about waiting for you and things like that, but they didn't work. It looked like I would never find the right piece. But by experience, I knew that the right thing would come to me. I left my desk and took the dog out, running over the lines, especially the final line, I stop somewhere waiting for you, listening to what sort of sound came into my head after this line, what sort of instrument. And then, suddenly, I heard these goofy beats on the xylophone from fossils. And yes, yeah, that somehow seemed right for missing Whitman in one place and searching another, keeping encouraged, playful, hide-and-seek, the tune coming in and out, upbeat, but I felt with some solid depth, too. And then it struck me further. Fossils. Aren't these traces of animals that we no longer see, but if we seek here or there, we find that they have stopped, too, somewhere, and have been waiting for us? Not to say that Whitman is an old fossil, of course. He's more like some hidden treasure, perhaps, or a map for us to use to uncover the treasure hidden within us, the fossils of the deeper knowledge we once possessed but allowed ourselves to forget. Okay, enough of this. But before we finish, I ought to add one more thing. The final word of Song of Myself is you. The opening word of the poem is I. So here's Whitman's overall progression. He starts with himself, the thing he knows, but he ends with you, or rather with us, his readers. He has been speaking about himself all this time, not in order to elevate himself, even though he tells us in the very first line that he will celebrate myself, but that's a little different. No, he's not out for his own glory or self-importance. Instead, he's telling us about himself so that he can pass it on to us, so that we can pick up these words from off the page, or from off our boot soles, if necessary, and elevate ourselves. In another sense, the final line begins with I, and as in James Joyce's Finnegan's Wake, the final line can lead us right back to the opening line, turning the poem into a cycle to be read over and over without end. Failing to fetch me at first, keep encouraged. Missing me one place, search another. I stop somewhere, waiting for you. I celebrate myself, and what I assume, you shall assume, for every atom belonging to me as good belongs to you. I loaf and invite my soul. I lean and loaf at my ease, observing a spear of summer grass, round and round. And so I'm tempted to start all over again next time with the first chant of Song of Myself and go through the poem a second time with you. We'll find all sorts of new and deeper things as we go through it again. Have no doubt about that. Yes, I'm tempted, but you'll probably be glad to hear that I've resisted the temptation. Enough of Whitman for the moment. Genug schon. There will be moments again under lamplight when Whitman will show up, having stopped somewhere else waiting for us. No, all that's left now is to read these two final chants over one more time, catching the sound and the spirit of them, dancing with them if we can, and then we bow to Whitman and move on, coaxed to the vapor and the dusk, departing as air, departing on air, this radio show. The past and present wilt. I have filled them and emptied them, and proceed to fill my next fold of the future. Listener up there, hear you, what have you to confide to me? Look in my face while I snuff the sidle of evening. Talk honestly, for no one else hears you, and I stay only a minute longer. Do I contradict myself? Very well, then, I contradict myself. I am large. I contain multitudes. I concentrate toward them that are nigh. I wait on the door slab. Who has done his day's work and will soonest be through with his supper? Who wishes to walk with me? Will you speak before I am gone? Will you prove already too late? The spotted hawk swoops by and accuses me. He complains of my gab and my loitering. I too am not a bit tamed. I too am untranslatable. I sound my barbaric yawp over the roofs of the world. The last scud of day holds back for me. It flings my likeness after the rest, and true as any on the shadowed wilds, it coaxes me to the vapor and the dusk. The last scud of day holds back for me. It flings my likeness after the rest, and true as any on the shadowed wilds, it coaxes me to the vapor and the dusk. I depart as air. I shake my white locks at the runaway sun. I effuse my flesh in eddies and drift it in lacy jags. I bequeath myself to the dirt to grow from the grass I love. If you want me again, look for me under your boot soles. You will hardly know who I am or what I mean, but I shall be good health to you nevertheless, and filter and fiber your blood. Failing to fetch me at first, keep encouraged. Missing me one place, search another. I stop somewhere waiting for you. And that's it. Song of Myself by Walt Whitman, who assures us he stops somewhere waiting for us. And I'll stop somewhere, too, in about 2 weeks, waiting for you to join me, Robert Louis Abrahamson, once again for Evening Under Lamplight on Cambridge 105, community radio in your city. And now, well, it's closing time, of course.
listen if the band is really happening, and the Johnny Walker wisdom running high. And my very sweet companion, she's the angel of compassion, she's rubbing half the world against her thigh. And every drinker, every dancer lifts a happy face to thank her. The fiddler fiddles something so sublime. The women tear their blouses off, the men they dance in the polka dot. It's partner found and it's partner lost. Hell to pay when the fiddler stops. It's closing time. The women tear their blouses off, and the men they dance in the polka dot. It's partner found and it's partner lost. It's hell to pay when the fiddler stops. It's closing time. Closing time. Oh, we're lonely, we're romantic, and the cider laced with acid, and the Holy Spirit's crying, where's the beef? And the moon is swimming naked, and the summer night is fragrant with a mighty expectation of relief. So we struggle and we stagger down the snakes and up the ladder to the tower where the blessed hours chime. And I swear it happened just like this, a sigh, a cry, a hungry kiss. The gates of love, they budge an inch. Can't say much has happened since the closing time. Yeah, I swear it happened just like this, a sigh, a cry, a hungry kiss. The gates of love, they budge an inch. I can't say much has happened since.
Can't say much has happened since.
Can't say much has happened since, but closing time. Closing time. I loved you for your beauty. That doesn't make a fool of me. You were in it for your beauty too. And I loved you for your body. There's a voice that sounds like God to me declaring.